It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna. It's our bi-week edition, and today we brought in former Notre Dame running back and walk-on, former walk-on, of course, Mick Asaph, founder of Yoke. We'll be talking a little bit about his business ventures and some really cool insight into the operations of Notre Dame football. Tommy Reese, Lance Taylor, Ian Book. He's got some interesting perspective from being inside that locker room and inside those meeting rooms for 4 years. So we'll get to that interview, and then Matt and I will be back on the other side of that to wrap up and look ahead to next week when Notre Dame gets back into action preparing for North Carolina. So without further ado, here's Mick Asaph. Pleased to welcome into the Shamrock special guest, former Notre Dame running back and current CEO, is that what we're going to go with?
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
Mick Asaph of Yoke. Mick, thanks for taking some time this morning to chat with us. And I guess before we get into the football, which there's a lot to get into, I mean, you've sort of founded a company at the perfect time when nobody can do anything but stay home and probably play video games. So I guess for people who don't know much about it, like, explain to our listeners sort of your venture and where it's all sort of gone over the last 6-9 months.
Absolutely. So Yoke's a platform that's focused on bringing fans and their favorite athletes together through the special bond of video games. So Yoke's an app that allows fans to go on there and set a challenge to play video games with their favorite athletes. And there's over 750 athletes on the platform that play video games with their fans, hundreds of interactions every day. And kind of start off with a simple question to Leonard Fournette that said, Leonard Fournette, would you want to play video games with your fans if you could make a few bucks for doing so? And he sent out a tweet about it. It got some great traction, and we started adding more and more athletes with this premise set around video games, because we realized it was something that a lot of athletes are doing anyways. And, you know, it was something that kind of sparked originally, and kind of through teamwork, through teammates, kind of grew like wildfire in certain areas. We got like 25 49ers players. We started adding people, you know, really quickly. And, you know, we're trying to get to the 1,000 athlete mark. And, you know, luckily a lot of athletes bring a lot of fans. And so it's a business that kind of grew pretty rapidly to start once we found the right, you know, product market fit.
You mentioned teammates. I know Nick Wisher's involved. I know some other people from inside and outside the football program at Notre Dame were involved. How does this all initially come together? I know you only took your role fairly recently, but now how do the seeds get planted? I mean, it's two guys who host a podcast that are not exactly a business first. Like, what are those conversations like?
Yeah. So I think for me, starting a business was something I've wanted to do for a long time. I kind of saw my brother start a business while I was in high school and thought that was something that looked fun and looked challenging and kind of looked like being on a team again where you don't know the outcome, but you're kind of, you know, you can work harder and increase your chances of success. And so that was kind of what appealed to me in a startup, was just the competitive nature of it. And so the original idea kind of came in June of 2019, so actually quite a bit ago. And I had this idea, went to someone I know who had some legal expertise, and he agreed to help with the legal stuff, but also give us some money to get it started. And that's when I kind of reached out to my first co-founder, Bailey O'Sullivan, who I went to high school with, and I just knew as someone who was going to work really hard. And from there, it's just countless hours on the phone, countless hours thinking through problems. You know, that everyone wants to start a business, but there's so many details that goes into it. It's kind of like, you know, people see the game of football and are like, why can't we stop them on defense? And have no clue, you know, how much goes into, you know, running a defense. And I think that's kind of like a business is like, you know, people are like, oh, why can't we tackle? So I think there's a lot that went into it. And for me, just not having done any of it, it was learning everything from scratch. So a lot of just Googling and figuring out what we're doing wrong, what we're doing right. And then asking people who were smarter than us. And luckily there were a lot of people who were smarter than us. So we had a lot of phone calls. And, you know, we added Nick Wisher a few weeks later when we realized two rising seniors in college wasn't going to be, you know, the easiest thing to kind of build a story with. We needed someone who had a little bit of work experience working in the business. And Nick kind of gave us that, having worked with Kraft Heinz in Chicago and having a master's degree kind of gave us some much needed experience. And also, he was kind of our voice in the business that was a little bit more reasonable, as, you know, Bailey and I were kind of always shooting ideas up and Nick would kind of shoot us down with the voice of reason, which is kind of a good, you know, balance to have.
Was it easy or difficult to decide, like, you know what, I'm not going to do the fifth year of football at Notre Dame? I mean, you just gotten the scholarship. And I'm curious if that, as you sort of revisit that decision or look back at that decision, the way this season has unfolded for Notre Dame changes how you feel about it.
Yeah, I definitely don't regret taking it away. It's definitely probably the hardest decision I've had to make. Because, you know, the only decision that was that big in magnitude was probably going to college, and I only applied to two places. So, and one of them was playing football at Notre Dame, and one was going to MIT. And so between those two, it was kind of obvious I wasn't going to turn down playing football at Notre Dame if I had the chance to do that. So definitely the hardest decision I've had to make. I definitely think that it happened for a reason, and I don't know. I mean, Notre Dame's having a great season. I don't know. Nothing would have been the same if I was there. And so I don't wish I could go back and enter the team. I mean, I hope we'd be undefeated if I was there too, but just never know. So I'm happy that those guys are doing so well. And for me, it was something where I felt like my impact on Yoke was so big, and being the founder and the CEO. And, you know, I had this group of people. I had hired, you know, three employees basically. And those were people that, you know, they needed me and they were counting on me for success. And, you know, it would be like Ian stepping away from the team. You know, Notre Dame's offense kind of runs through Ian. And so Yoke was running through me in a way that if I stepped away, I would, you know, Bailey, who gave up a chance to do something else after college, Zach Farley, who kind of stepped away from all his other opportunities to help build the app, I kind of leave them out stranded. And that wasn't something I was comfortable doing, where I felt like Notre Dame was something where I kind of had given it my all. And I knew that those guys were positioned for success with or without me for that season. And I think, you know, that's the part where I feel like I was correct in that most of the work that I did is an off season and getting, you know, those guys ready, and it appears they've been ready so far. So I'm happy that they're doing well and Yoke's doing well as well. So I got no complaints.
What, I mean, we all see the videos and I know you knew it was coming beforehand, but there's nothing that gets, I think, all of us more than seeing those videos of people getting awarded scholarships on Twitter, on social media. To be a part of that, I mean, what was that like? And you're wearing the walk-on players union hat as you speak to us now. Do you get that when you officially get on scholarship? Do you get it when you win the walk-on player of the year award at the Echoes like you did last year? What's kind of what gains you that?
So the hat is something that is purchasable usually for events. We have golf tournaments. We have the WAPU Open. We have a lot of events and we love merch. It's our, you know, it's our way to identify as people of members of the nation, which, you know, among certain crowds like St. Mary's, people might, you know, make you more popular than the normal football players. So there's certainly some added benefits to being a WAPU in some cases, to being a walk-on. And, you know, there's a sense of pride because you go through a little bit of a different experience. But I think that, you know, the scholarship experience was very cool for me. The way that I was told I would be on scholarship before that was at such an emotional moment for us kind of fit. So right after the Florida State game, and it was in passing, you know, so quickly, Coach Kelly was like, you know, if you want to come back, I got you. And I was like, okay, well, I think that means that I'd be on scholarship. But it wasn't overtly clear. And I hadn't heard anything since. So it's not like I'm going to, you know, ask Coach Kelly about it, because I assume that that's, you know, what he meant. And I was probably going to come back anyways, because I wanted to, you know, be on the team for another year. But that moment's super cool just because it's not really how happy you are, it's just how happy your teammates are for you. I think that's the coolest part. And that was the part that was the most exciting for me, just to see, you know, just to get all the guys to go crazy and just to see how happy they are for you. I think that was, you know, the coolest moment of that all.
What has it been like sort of taking in this team as a fan, yet, you know, you're so close to so many guys on the team, you know, Ian in particular, and to sort of see the success that he's having to, I mean, take it up. I think particularly the last couple of games, Clemson and Boston College, I mean, he's playing at, you know, kind of a different level, and people are noticing. You know, I think you sort of see his name with a different kind of buzz about it lately. So I was curious, like, as somebody who has had his back in good times and bad, you know, and I did enjoy your tweet over the weekend about there are so many fans, expert writers, and Twitter users that owe Ian Book a sincere handwritten apology. They also owe him a thank you note. What I mean, what's that been like to sort of take in? And do you collect the apology notes at your house, or do they go straight to Ian?
I think they can go to the Goog and they'll sort them there. but it's exciting just to see, because I, you know, football is such a game where the most minor details can affect success in such a big way. And obviously I'm able to see every single practice rep the last 4 years, and you know how talented, I know how talented Ian is as a thrower. I mean, probably known with a smoother motion as a thrower in college football. And there's been so many moments where I feel like he's just on the edge of playing at a Heisman level, and nothing is easy in college football. Like, even, you know, I guess the people who are winning Heisman usually, Joe Burrow made it look easy to play quarterback. Quarterback's such a challenging position in general, especially when you're a quarterback playing for the team that's circling everyone's schedule. I mean, people are going to spend a unique amount of time preparing for Ian opposed to other quarterbacks they play during the year, because they want to beat Notre Dame. So just to see Ian kind of break through, I think him and Coach Reese have spent so much time together, and they're just gelling together at the right time. And then obviously getting Ben back healthy has been huge for Ian as well. Ian's kind of had a big receiver most years, and I think, you know, having Ben kind of fill that role has been huge, because he had, you know, the hamstring injury early. And I mean, you guys know Ben probably from Northwestern as well. He's always been made a lot of big plays. And I think for Ian, the main thing is just him and Reese are seeing through the same eyes right now. And once Ian kind of sees through the same eyes as Coach Reese, he's able to call plays in a way where Ian is always comfortable. And I mean, Ian can pretty much make every throw on the field when he's comfortable and when he's standing in there confidently. I think, you know, that throw he made to Ben where he kind of pedaled out of the pocket. Yeah. Once I saw that play, I was like, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to play as well as Ian from here on out, just because he looked so confident in the pocket. Like, he wasn't spinning his head around. He just kind of pedaled out of the pocket, found his way around, and found Ben, and Ben scored. And I was like, you know, it feels like there's a level of confidence and a level of comfort with the play call that Ian's just going to keep playing at this level. And it's obviously exciting to see, just because I know how hard he works. I mean, all he cares about is playing well for the team. And, you know, to see someone rewarded for working that hard is exciting, because there's a lot of people who aren't as dedicated to doing what he does. I mean, he doesn't really leave his house because he's worried about, you know, COVID protocols. He doesn't do much that you're not supposed to do. And just exciting to see him rewarded, and people are noticing kind of how hard he's worked for the last, you know, 5 years now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I don't know if there's anyone outside of the Goog who ever thought Kyren Williams would be this good, especially this soon. And frankly, based on people we talked to inside the Goog, I'm not sure there were people last year inside the Goog who thought he was going to have this kind of season. You were in that room with him last year. I mean, not asking you to be Nostradamus here, but I mean, what did you see that indicated the talent was there, the pieces were there, and that, you know, he was closer to putting it all together than what we saw on the field last year?
Yeah, Kyren, I've thought Kyren is an incredible back. I think I posted an Instagram story in August that said Kyren will be the best running back in the country, and I believe
you
that.
Are Nostradamus, son. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen Kyren a lot. He's super explosive. He has hands. He can basically run routes and catch the ball like a receiver. And then between the tackles, he's powerful. He's very good at cutting back against the grain. His vision's incredible, and you know, I think he uses contact effectively. So he isn't someone that runs into defenders, but he understands when it's time to put his head down and get a few extra yards. So I think Kyren has that. You could kind of see as a freshman, even. I think he had kind of just a bad first touch on the field versus Louisville. He had a drop in, I think, one of his first snaps. And then, obviously, as a true freshman, that's not great for your confidence to have a drop on your first snap. But I think Kyren could have played as a true freshman. But we had, you know, a lot of players who were good, so there wasn't a need to play him. But for a long time, and then Kyren changed his body over break in a way that kind of let him become that next level back. He didn't have the breakaway speed freshman year that he has now. And I think that was the last piece he was missing. Because he's someone that's twitchy, powerful, great hands, really, really great route runner. And I think that's something that over the rest of the season and next year, people are going to be really, really, they're going to have trouble with Kyren out of the backfield. You see ETN, someone who every year has got better out of the backfield. I think Kyren's someone who's going to be like a massive, especially, you know, if Ian's not here next year or whatever, quarterbacks can be, benefit greatly from Kyren out of the backfield, because he can create some really, really big matchup issues if you put a linebacker on him.
You know, I was curious from a coaching standpoint. We spent a lot of time talking about Tommy Rees, and I mean, for good reason. He's had a great campaign. You know Lance Taylor a little bit better than most, and mm-hmm. we don't really spend much time with him, or you know, he's not really out front. How does he reach guys as a coach? Like, is there anything about him that is unique? Like, can you give us a sense of sort of his coaching style and why it's sort of connecting?
Yeah, I think Coach Taylor is another former walk-on. I think former walk-ons make the best coaches. Clark Lee, former walk-on. Yeah. Tommy was, you know, he might have looked like a walk-on while he was playing as a freshman. Certainly nothing uniquely good about the way his body looked or his physique that would have made him feel like a scholarship quarterback. But Coach Taylor is someone who kind of has that sense of, I think that walk-on sense of, he understands that, you know, everyone has to work for what they get, which is, as a player, you want to know that your coach respects you for the work you're putting in, opposed to just respects you for, like, your name or, you know, your recruiting ranking or whatever it may be. So Coach Taylor's a fair coach, which is one big piece you could ask for. And then in terms of style, he's not really demanding, but you know, there's a standard that Coach Taylor makes. You want to reach a level because Coach Taylor's there. He's someone that he kind of commands just with his presence that you give it your all and that you do certain things because you want to make Coach Taylor happy because of how much he cares about us. And he's so clear with his communication. He's someone you never misunderstand Coach Taylor. He's very, very, you know, adamant about what you need to do, tells you, he's a clear communicator. And I think that's super important, especially at the running back position and, you know, protection specifically. You just want someone who's going to, you know, tell you what to do and stand by you if you do what he says, because there can be miscommunications at the running back position. And Coach Taylor will be the first person. He'll say he's wrong if he's wrong, but he'll tell you, this is what you need to do. This is how we're going to do it. Then we're going to practice it, and then we're going to go out and execute it. And if something goes wrong in the game, he's not going to let you as a player take the blame. He's going to say, that's on me, coach. And then he's going to come and talk to you. And I think that type of coach who can divert, you know, the blame and the emotion to themselves and then come to you and deliver a clear message is super important. I think Coach Taylor kind of has the genuine head coach of someone who can, you know, take a lot of things in that are going to, I mean, that's why he's so good on the field, I think, is because, you know, kind of Coach Reese is in the booth, right? So Coach Taylor's on the field, and he's kind of your – he's Ian's point of contact. He's everyone's point of contact during timeouts, et cetera. And he commands a lot of respect and attention when he talks, and that's really important, especially in that position. You know, having both coordinators in the booth, you need people on the field who are clearly communicating to the players, because if they're not clearly communicating, then Coach Lee and Coach Reese aren't able to be as effective as they should be. And so, I mean, everyone respects Coach Taylor, and, you know, when he speaks, people listen, which is super important.
Pete touched on this story about you last year. 2016, obviously didn't go the way anyone wanted to. You give a big locker room speech at some point. It's almost hard to, frankly, to imagine a walk-on speaking up, especially a guy who's not a junior, senior, and get in the face of some of these guys who, you know, were going to be top draft picks. Where does that come from? What can you share about that moment, and what ultimately pushed you to do that? I mean, were you scared afterward? Were you like, you know, I hope I didn't, you know, I hope this locker room doesn't fall apart even more than it already has at 4-8.
Yeah. I think in general, throughout my career, it's always been, not even just in 2016, 2017, 2018, and being on the scout team gives you this opportunity more than the average player, but you can challenge people nonstop 24/7. So being on the scout team, if you make a big play, you can go up to someone and say, you can't let me score on this play. Like, if I'm scoring on this play, I'm concerned what Travis Etienne's going to do to us on Saturday. So how about you guys stop, you know, messing around, and we get to work. And I think that those are the type of moments that I think that has transcended the scout team. I think there's a lot more of that since I left. And you would just – I noticed it early that when I would do that, the rest of practice would go better, and they would play – they would execute – better, and they would play harder, and there would be more effort. And so once I realized that, and then I had this ability to drive people to play harder the rest of practice, then I would just kind of do it nonstop, because I felt like it was an effective way to get us to practice harder. And that came from high school basketball. I was not very good at scoring as a basketball player, but I was good at defense, or at least good at, you know, getting in people's head to the point that they were bad at scoring. And so that was kind of something where I just was able to bother other players to the point they were unable to score. And that started when my freshman year, I got called up to varsity, mostly just to practice with the varsity players so they would be, you know, ready for the games. And coach was like, you know, just got to get in people's heads so that they're ready when we're playing on the road against rival schools. And I was like, okay. And then, you know, I would bring out the best in our starting point guard by defending him. And I was like, this is kind of fun. And I think that kind of just carried me. So it certainly, you know, would piss off a fair amount of people just being the agitator. But our defense would always do better when they get challenged or they get called out. And so that was something that I took as a, you know, it was my role in a lot of cases to make sure no matter who we were playing that I was calling someone out. Tavon Coney was one of my favorite players to call out. And there was a lot of them throughout the years. That Dante Vaughn, there's just a lot of players that it's fun to, and, you know, eventually the older players understand what I'm doing, but always this, whoever was freshman, sophomore, like they would get so pissed at me. They'd be like, why is he showboating on us after a 10-yard game? And like, you know, and then, you know, that's just kind of just what I would do. And I think that culture still exists in the scout team. I think it's a healthy one, because otherwise you just go through the motions in practice. And if you look at our defense, they're doing pretty well. So I think that whatever it is that we did to make them go a little bit harder in practice certainly doesn't seem like it hurt them too badly.
Who paid you back the most for being wound up in practice?
I took the hardest hits for sure. I think the worst probably – I got tackled a few times, and that Coach Lee would always make a huge deal if someone tackled me. He'd be like, we're not going to do this just because Mick's, you know, trying to make us better. And Coach Lee would always have your back, which makes it way better.
Yeah.
Because he understands that what I'm trying to do is make people better. And so sometimes people we're not supposed to go to the ground and practice, but some people would just full on like take out my legs, and Coach Lee would be like, we're not doing this. Like, this is not something we're doing on our team. If you're going to do that again, you're going to have to leave practice. And so there was definitely some people, that would try to take bigger shots like after a bad play that they had. But, you know, Coach Lee always has the scout teams back because he understands how important they are. And yeah. That was a great aspect of Coach Lee.
That was his thing when he was in college. I mean, yeah. He wasn't like playing with the varsity the whole time. And so who's the Mick Asaf of this group? Who's the positive irritant of the scout team that's going to wind up Liam Eikenberg or wind up Owusu Koromoa?
Yeah, I think there's a few. So I think Owusu as a freshman was someone that really pissed people off when he was on scout team because he's very difficult to block, and that's as evident as ever. But I mean, he wasn't easy to block as a freshman either. Matt Salerno, I think, has done a great job, and you know, now you see him starting on punt return. So something about people who agitate find a will somewhere to get on the field. But I think there's a good amount of people who are doing that. I think, you know, Pat Pelini does a good job on the defense. I think he signals now, but he was someone who, I think, you know, if you intercept the quarterback, no one's really happy because everyone's pissed off if the scout team gets an interception. So that's the best part about scout offense is that there's no limitations. Scout defense, it's, you know, you're trying to react and do things the right way, be in the right coverages. Scout offense, it's like, just go try to score, like execute a card. So it's a lot easier. And so it's just a lot easier to be an agitator on scout offense than scout defense. Scout defense, it's like, try not to get yelled at because it's really hard to react to motions and coverages when you have to do something new every week.
I can't help but think, given your day job now, I could picture you guys just talking trash the whole time playing video games, right? Like, is that half the fun of this, especially knowing there's no real retaliation?
Yeah, I think I do find ways that make it that I draw parallels to what we would, you know, do on the scout team. And I, you know, talk to athletes all day who are better than me at sports. So that's something that I've stuck to through the process. But there's a lot of aspects of the competitive nature of a team that you kind of carry into a business. And so I'm always talking even trash to my co-founders about things that are yoke related and not yoke related. So I don't think that the agitator gene is going anywhere for me, unfortunately, for better or for worse. I have to just kind of tune it back sometimes so that I don't get my co-founders upset.
Yeah. Well, Mick, why don't we wrap up on this? I know that we won't talk about the end of the Clemson game and, you know, whether you're on the field or not. But if Notre Dame is in Charlotte for the ACC championship game, will you be down there for that? And then also, if they make it to the playoff, you got to figure out a way to either get to the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl for that.
Yeah, I think that if it's possible to be at a Notre Dame game, I'll try to be there, pending COVID protocols and all the other rules. But if there's a way in the stadium, I'd love to see them. I mean, this team's so fun to watch. I think they have the best two coordinators in college football and probably one of the wisest head coaches. And so this is the funnest team I've ever watched play. They're so good at what they do. They have the most defined identity of any Notre Dame team I've seen in a long time. And you have an offensive identity and a defensive identity. And there's just, I feel like when you watch a Notre Dame game now, you actually know what'll happen or you have a better idea of what'll happen. And I don't remember that being the case in a long time. So I really do love watching this Notre Dame team as much as I've ever liked watching a Notre Dame team play.
We've had Mike McGlinchey, Aaron Taylor, and Ryan Harris on the podcast so far this season. Now you, I'm going to organize a Royal Rumble when COVID restrictions are lifted and get you all in a ring. My money's on you after this 25 minute chat. I wouldn't want to get on your bad side.
Certainly the smallest of those people.
We had Tirico on. I'm pretty sure you can take out Mike Tirico.
Okay. Yeah, that's possible. One time you called me Patrick Pelini on a special teams play, my only tackle of my career.
Do you just have a notebook in front of you? Do you have a notebook in front of you right now where like you write down every single slight like that ever?
No, I just remember a lot of them, but I just know that clip was like my one tackle of my career was Patrick Pelini.
It's fantastic.
So that was just the way of the road.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mick, again, we appreciate the time, the insight into Yoke and obviously Notre Dame football, and best of luck with everything moving forward. Hopefully we will bump into you at a distance in Charlotte during the ACC championship game.
I love it. I appreciate you guys taking the time, and best of luck with the podcast moving forward. I'll be listening moving forward for sure.
Awesome. Thanks, Mick. Cool.
All right, guys.
Appreciate you, Mick.
Yep. Take care. Later.
That was former Notre Dame running back Mick Asef with Matt. I thought some pretty cool insights on Lance Taylor, but also the culture of Notre Dame football right now. And I think it's interesting to sort of hear the idea that this one, you know what you're going to get from Notre Dame every week, which I agree with. And then also that, you know, the connection with the roster and the commitment to it is as good as it's ever been, which I think is, you know, I don't know. It's sort of an interesting thing to hear when, you know, he was with it the previous 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would criticize him if he came out here and said, I have buyer's remorse or regret. It's killing me to watch these guys make a possible national championship mm-hmm. run without me, especially when he's still living in South Bend and he's still dealing with a lot of these guys all the time. But he seems to be in a really good place. A lot of fun stories. I mean, one of those guys, I think, I would say I'd want him in the locker room and not in the opposing team, but I don't know if I'd want him on the locker room if I got to face him and deal with him every day. But he's fun to have on a podcast, that's for sure.
I think if you were another walk-on, he would be like the best teammate ever. Because he'd be like, yeah, you're not afraid to say the stuff that I'm thinking, but I am just scared to death to actually speak up.
Every single one of us who's ever so much as like played T-ball growing up has someone in our life who's been like that, right? Like,
oh yeah,
like that guy who just won't shut up and who like you can't help but like pat on the back after instead of punch you in the face despite how much they get under your skin.
Yeah, I mean, I did a story on him, it was around the bowl time last year, and it was really like one of the most enjoyable stories that I had done all year. And you think like, okay, it's a walk-on who's popular in the locker room, but people outside the program don't know that much about him, and just sort of report that out, talking to not only teammates, but his older brother, Hank, you know, coaches a little bit. I was really struck by like how highly regarded he was, in the locker room as like sort of a tone setter. And I think though, you know, you can listen to him describe what he did in practice and how he saw it. And, you know, that's important, but I think to hear other people say like, yeah, this mattered, like this made a difference, I thought was really interesting.
Good for him, for Clark Lee always having his back. And also good for him for speaking up. Like, you don't, I mean, I'd lie to you if I say I give the scout team my full attention in season as far as like tracking what they should be doing or how they should be acting or even when we would be able to go to practices in non-COVID times. But to hear him say like, look, if I'm scoring on you, like we're in trouble. Like you're playing an ACC team, a Big Ten team, or whoever this week. Mm-hmm. Like you can't stop me. You know, you really need to get your stuff together. So, I mean, there is a method to the madness that I think is easy to miss if you only look for the puns and the quips. But like you said, you don't rise to the status that he did in that locker room and have the love and respect of everyone in that locker room if you don't make your due contribution. I did find it funny. He tweeted during the Boston College game, I guess ABC misidentified Tommy Rees in a
yes.
glasses, a hat, and mask. Turns out it was Dean Petzing, an analyst for Notre Dame, who was up in the box as well. Good call, because, I mean, frankly, with that kind of view, I think everyone kind of looks alike.
It's not quite the Brian Harden, Bob Diaco, mistaken identity
that.
From 2012. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I find him to be an interesting personality because I think it's every winning locker room has a few guys like that that really sort of carry the day, that find a way to pour everything that they have into whatever they're into right now, which I think probably speaks to why he's not on the team now. Is like he needed to pour everything he had into Yoke, and you know, a lot of respect for making that decision, because I would imagine that's very difficult. And I don't know, I the Senior Bowl invites came out and books going to that, and then I found myself getting roped into a Twitter debate.
I saw this on your fleet, which I refuse to engage in.
but it's just like some people are like, hey, you know, Ian's not going to make it in the NFL. He should come back and play at Notre Dame. You know, this is as good as it gets. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to these guys. Like, when you know you're ready to do something else, go do it. Like, and I think for Ian with the NFL, I mean, that's a little bit more of a clear path. But with Mick and Yoke, he's like, I'm ready to do something else. I want to pour myself into something else. And like, playing Notre Dame football is not is awesome, but this is not the top of the mountain for me for the rest of my life. So go for it. I don't know. I just find
with rare exception, like Sean Crawford, who had basically his entire career wiped out due to injuries. Yep. I don't think any non-like bum wants to spend 6 years in college. You know what I mean? Like, it's fun, but like, you're not going to get that much out of it. Like, with two
playing
extra
football,
years.
You're talking about like if you're at Notre Dame, and you're like, you know what, I want to go be a doctor, and I can get some advanced work done on, you know, pre-med, or you know, I want to get an MBA is probably a little bit more of a path here, and you know, Sean Crawford's doing that, but yeah, then I get it. But if you have other passions, like, follow them. And I don't know, it's just one of my pet peeves that people think that they can dictate what other people's passions are and their life decisions. Like, I will never get roped into like, it was a good decision to come back or a bad decision to leave. Like, it was your decision, like, go for it. And I have a lot of respect for people who make those decisions that would seem on the surface to sort of fly in the face of like, well, is that a really good thing? No, like, go for it. And you know, Book's going to do that with the NFL. Mick did that with Yoke. I think that's
Mick
awesome.
Did it with coming to Notre Dame. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be like, well, why don't you want to go to MIT and get a degree? Just, you know, you got to go to Notre Dame to get your head beat in. Like, yeah, that's what he wanted to do. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest, the thought, I mean, I've had some fans reach out and ask, oh, is he going to come back for 6 years? Is the school even going to allow that? I mean, you got a hard enough time getting fifth
would.
Years. They would? Okay.
They would.
Yeah. That's good to know, because I wasn't sure if they would. But even then, there are serious roster considerations to take into account moving forward, because this is all going to catch up to everyone with the way this awkward year has just railroaded everything. Now, if Ian Book went into Brian Kelly's office and said, I'm in for another year, I don't think Brian would say get out.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he'd be welcome back for sure.
But, I mean, like, put yourself in Ian Book's shoes. Let's say you make the playoff this year. Two playoffs in 3 years. You're winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history. I'm going to come back and, I don't know, I guess maybe try to win a championship if I did this year. But if I don't, I'm going to get killed every single week.
Lose your offensive line.
And not to mention, like, football is really hard and really physical. Like, if you want to make the NFL, like, the less hits you have on your body, the better chance you have. Big picture.
No, absolutely. So it's, I don't know, I just find that kind of interesting dynamic. So, Notre Dame off this week before North Carolina next week. Your bye week plans, Matt? Do you have any? Hold up in your condo, I'm guessing.
I'm holed up. We got a call last night from my daughter's school's daycare saying her teacher is COVID, so we are isolating. Fun times.
We may be doing much the same here in South Bend. So.
I do want to give a shout out. I got an email from a reader this week suggesting we get Mick on the podcast. The reader did not leave his name, and his email address did not have his name in it. I don't want to repeat his email address out loud, but you're listening. Thank you, whoever you are, for the suggestion, because it was a fun show.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we will be back early next week for sort of a pre-Thanksgiving. We're targeting to have Mike Golic Jr. on, get back into our offensive lineman mode. Maybe, I don't know, do I want to say, like, early bald as well? I don't know. But he should be an excellent guest for us. And then obviously much like Boston College, I'm planning to go to North Carolina. We'll see if I'll be podcasting from, is it Keenan Stadium down in Chapel Hill? On Friday evening. So until then, enjoy your idle week. And then we will be back early next week, hopefully with Mike Golic Jr. As Notre Dame preps for its second most interesting game of the regular season, that trip to North Carolina. So until then, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for being with us on The Shamrock.